It's Friday, June 26th, and this is Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You with me, Jeff Schwartz, solo end of the week podcast. Hope you guys had a fantastic week. We got a lot to cover today. It's going to be a great show. Got some NFL news. Are we playing in the preseason, the regular season? What do I think about moves that are being made to get there? And we also have Tampa Bay Buccaneers center Ryan Jensen, who is the new center for Tom Brady, as Tom Brady is now in Tampa. We talk about that transition, meeting Tom, what he's learned from Tom so far. Well, how does Tom like his centers to wipe their butt sweat up? We talk about offensive line play, where he came from, all those things, great things. Great interview, 35 minutes long. But like I mentioned, let's start with some ins and outs about the preseason and things that the NFL has announced that is going to take place. Number one, the Hall of Fame game has been canceled on August 6th between the Steelers and the Cowboys. This makes a ton of sense. It's no surprise this was going to happen. You know, they're trying to contain as much as possible the environment for the NFL players as they get towards or really into training camp and also in the preseason. And this is a situation where you're going to camp early July 22nd. And I played the Hall of Fame game. It's not a lot of fun. I understand you're there to honor the past greats that are now in the Hall of Fame and also really just the entire history of the NFL. But for players, you go to camp early. You have an extra week of camp or so. You have an extra game. It's not very fun. Players don't like doing it. I've done it once. I went to camp like July 18th. All right, this is July 22nd. So Steelers, Cowboys not doing that. It's just too tough to control the environment in Ohio. But that leads team to believe that the first two preseason games, and Ryan will talk about this in a few minutes, probably not going to happen. There needs to be an appropriate ramp-up period to get ready to play properly in the preseason. And even though guys are working out on their own, and they are defying NFLPA, I mean, Tom Brady keeps posting every day almost about how they're working out without the PA's blessing. And again, you really can't control the players from working out. It's their time of the year, their body knows they have 4 weeks till training camp. They have to start getting themselves into that shape to get ready to play. They're going to keep working out. But as much as you can work out on your own, in groups, at a facility, there's nothing quite like practice reps, game reps. Something where you actually are doing your position, your job, as close to full speed as well. I know you can run a route full speed on air with Tom Brady, but it's still going to be a little bit different when Mike Evans lines up against a Tampa Bay defensive back and they go at it in practice. So I understand the idea for a ramp-up period. What's interesting, though, too, is that in the lockout year of 2011, we didn't have a ramp-up period. We got to camp and played right away. Again, there's a slight difference in the fact that you have not been able to work out with guys mostly to the last month or so. So you've been working out on your own. But we didn't need a ramp-up period then. And so I'm curious about the need for it physically now. I mean, I get it, but I'm not quite sure that's why they're doing it. I think they're doing it because they need to figure out how they're going to handle guys testing positive, the social distancing guidelines in the facility, and more logistical things of kind of starting training camp. And this ramp-up period is not just for the physical part of it, the mental part. It's for figuring out how they're going to do everything and for the players to understand this is probably not going to be a normal training camp. In fact, I can guarantee you it won't be a normal training camp. So the ramp-up period, I think, is less physical and more just mentally getting a hold of what's happening. It's hard to start day one in the same level of intensity you started day one last year. People ask, hey, how many games does someone need to get ready? And I say two, a starter, two games. You basically play two games now. You play game two and game three, maybe even just game three. What about competition, Jeff? What about competition for younger guys? And certainly the lack of training camp practices that are going to be full speed, the lack of pads now in training camp, and lack of preseason games will all hurt younger players. It will all hurt them. It will hurt late round draft picks like me. It'll hurt undrafted free agent picks. In training camp, your job is to get the team ready to play, right? If you have a longer training camp and a more usual training camp, then you can let the threes, who might not play this year, there was a surprise here and there, the third group, I should say, not the threes, the third group. So, you know, late round draft picks, undrafted guys, you know, street free agents, things like that. They can get more reps to start a practice in training camp because you have a long period before you play. And those reps are used to figure out, obviously, who can rise to the second team and who's the third team guy eventually going to get cut. Those reps aren't going to be there, in my opinion, at the same level they've been in other years. The job now is not so much getting everyone ready, but just getting the starters ready. And you're not trying to find a diamond in the rough. You don't have time to find a diamond in the rough. You have time to get your guys ready to play because you have the ramp-up period. You'll be practicing as hard, I imagine. So I think the starters, the ones and twos, will get more reps. It's going to hurt that back end of the roster. Now, how it relates specifically to preseason games, I've been in the opinion, it's been backed up, I've talked to NFL personnel about this, that you have a 53-man roster. It might be 55 now, new CB. I got to check that. I keep saying that. I got to check that out for real. Let's say it's 53 still. 47 of the 53 spots are already spoken for before training camp starts. They're spoken for via contract, draft slot, and need of your team. So those last spots are fought for typically on special teams. And those are where the game reps are important. So if there's a weight on like practice versus how you're performing, I would say like a game is almost like 5, 7, 8 times more important than how you practice. There's a lot of guys that practice but can't play in games. A lot of guys that don't practice very well and play. I was much better at playing games than was at practice. There's a calming effect, in my opinion, at least for me, of playing a game. I saw things more clearly. I kind of was able to turn it on. I wasn't able to quite feel the same way in a practice. So only having two games will hurt the evaluation of the back end guys. And again, it's like 10 guys for 6 spots. It's not 30 guys for 6. It's not 30 guys for 30 spots. It's 10 guys for 6 spots. And those special teams reps are so much more valuable in the game when you're going against someone else. In practice, it's good to do, obviously. But that is a concern of mine for the back end roster guys, is going to 2 games. Veterans will love it, absolutely, 100%. So I think we'll knock off at least 1 week of the preseason, maybe 2. We'll keep you updated as we go along. NFL owners have approved a proposal to cover the seats closest to the field and then place sponsorship logos over those seat coverings. The NFL stays making money, folks. They're trying to find ways to continue to make revenue. It's very clear the NFL is going to limit the fans around the players. So they said 7, 8 rows. They're going to not allow fans. They're going to put signage around them, just like we see in, you know, baseball when they cover the upper deck. You know, they might put a logo on there of the team or maybe of a sponsor. Makes a lot of sense for the players and fans to stay away from each other. Another way for the NFL to make money. And just another sign that this is not going to be a normal season. I've long been of the opinion that each individual state will set its guidelines for fans. So you might see California with less and you might see Texas with more. And how do you decide who goes to the game? I think the best way to do this, and there are some colleges, I believe Iowa State has stated, we're just going to let season ticket holders in and students and no one else. So it feels like if you are a Giants fan, Chiefs don't have PSLs, Giants, Cowboys, whoever, Panthers here in Charlotte, you have a PSL, you can go to the game. You want to buy a ticket off the street? Can't do it. Now, if you want to buy someone else's season ticket, sure, go ahead. But they're not going to allow single game tickets to be sold. They're not going to allow there to be a large capacity in the stadium. I don't think. I mean, Ohio State athletic director said they're going to get 40,000, 50,000 fans. And I mean, it's possible. Again, at some point, we're going to have to turn from, you know, the government telling us, hey, man, wear a mask, restrictions in place, to individual responsibility to go to sporting events and continue life. I mean, look, I am as a pro mask as there is. My wife is a nurse. She wears a mask the entire day and she wears a face shield. She's not at the hospital, but at her clinics, she has to wear that. I am 100% on board with masks. I was 100% on board with a stricter lockdown at the start of this whole process. I thought if we did a better actual strict lockdown, which would be tough in America to do, especially with the numbers we have and the individualism we have in our country, that would mitigate. So I am fully on board with what we're doing now, but at some point, and maybe football is that point, sports are the point in general, basketball, baseball coming back, there has to be a talk about continuing life with the virus around us. Getting back to football and how this relates, I think there could be a situation where, you know, same with you know, like I said, like individual choice to show up to a game or not. That to me feels like what we might get to at some point, because otherwise you're waiting for a vaccine that might not come. Am I not arrive on time? Vaccines don't always work 100%. We know that with the flu, obviously. They work less than 50%, I think, with the flu. People won't take them. I think we could be moving there. I know there's some states that have to put back restrictions on, like North Carolina. We can't go to phase three. But I've been thinking about when we get back to normal, or we attempt to get back to normal. Maybe football is the way to do it. Again, I told you guys Monday, I'm rooting football to be back because it feels like we have some normalcy again. So I'll keep you updated on the news and notes with the NFL, with COVID and whatnot. All right, guys, on to Ryan Jensen, Tampa Bay Buccaneers center. Great conversation. Hope you guys enjoy. All right, now welcome in Ryan Jensen, the center, offensive line, the center for Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Ryan, welcome in, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm glad you're here. There's a lot of things to get to, especially with the way we're preparing for football right now, quarantine life, stay at home, all of that. But everyone wants to know, Ryan, it's an important question. People have asked me this. People asked you this. You're going to be asked this a lot. Is how sweaty is your ass?
It's not bad. You know, down here in Florida, with the humidity, it just naturally gets a little, you know, it gets a little moist down there. But, you know, for me, I'm not a huge sweater. You know, it's kind of weird. I'll sweat for about the first 15 minutes of practice or a game or anything like that. And then it's probably not healthy, but I just like dry up and I just stop sweating. So
you're dehydrated.
Yeah, it's probably not good, but you know, it's just my body adapts and overcomes.
So for those who don't know, Tom Brady, who's now Ryan's quarterback, his precious hands, the hands he throws with, the right hand, obviously, which is in the quarterback's butt, he's worried about that hand getting wet. So notoriously, he has told stories about how he goes to great length to teach the center, who is now Ryan, how to fold a towel and stick it in their crack to make sure the sweat doesn't get on his hand. So there's a photo that came out about a month ago when you guys working out for the first time of him literally showing you how to fold that towel. Were you aware of this technique he was teaching you? Is it new? Can you handle this technique?
Yeah, it's easy. You know, once you get used to having kind of a rough towel and some baby powder down your crack, you know, it's not bad. But you know, getting used to it, you know, it'll be a little different once we get, you know, in a game and wearing it, and I'm actually running around doing stuff. But you know, it's almost like I'm wearing a, you know, just a back diaper. You know, it's still strange, but it works.
I'm just so fascinated by this story because it goes to show you the lengths of Tom Brady, you know, just with the detail, right? Attention to detail, everything that matters to him, and the way that his center wears his towel and the way that you have to operate, every little detail matters to him. When you first met him, because now it's been a couple of months, what stood out to you the first time you saw him on the field in that workout?
Yeah, definitely. It's just the length of detail he goes into with, you know, how he wants his guys to run routes and, you know, just little things. You know, for me, it might just because he's getting a little bit older, you know, he wants me to get my butt up a little bit in my stance so he doesn't have to bend over as far. But, you know, just the length of detail that he goes in with, you know, when he wants his guys making the cut and having them, you know, stay relaxed. And it just, these little minute details like stood out like right away. It's just, it's amazing. And you can see why, you know, he's such a great quarterback. Is, you know, I'm sure in his everyday life too, he's so detailed about what he does, and it definitely shows in these little workouts that have been going on.
Was it not weird, but maybe eye-opening to see the amount of detail that goes in? I'm not saying Jameis Winston wasn't detailed, or the guys that you play with in Baltimore, Joe Flacco mostly, but just to see this, that extra little level. Because I've been bouncing around with quarterbacks. And like, you know, I got to Eli Manning and I saw just the way he picked up blitzes, the way he saw things on film, the way he did things, it was just different than anyone else. And it's a little bit shocking, right, to see that there even is an extra level now from, you know, Jameis Winston before last season was, I think he's still a good quarterback in the NFL, but there's even another level with Tom Brady.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just the way, you know, that detail and the way he operates, it's unreal. And just, you know, what he brings, you know, leadership wise, experience wise, you know, is a huge thing. You know, even for, you know, offensive linemen, just, you know, talking with him about football and how he sees things and how he wants me to see things. And, you know, it's different with every guy that he talks to. You know, he talks to, you know, other guys you know, how they're going to understand it. You know, he speaks their language, you know, there's a huge thing about always talking about, you know, football, you got to speak the same language. You know, with Tom, he has the ability to, you know, talk to different guys and help them understand in a way that is going to be proficient for them. And it's just, it's little minute things like that, that are just, you know, it's awesome to see.
So how much do you think your job will change on game day? How much is going to change what you have to do, you think, with Tom back there now?
Yeah, you know, that was a huge conversation that we had. Actually, the first time we ever FaceTimed. He FaceTimed me about 2 weeks after he signed. And
did you have his number, or did it just like show up like a random Boston area code?
It was just a random Boston Boston or Massachusetts area code.
Wait, seriously? So you answered a random FaceTime?
No, I didn't actually. So okay. I got a text from one of the front office guys like, "Hey, Tom's going to try to call you here in about the next 10 minutes." And I'm in Colorado, and it's like 9:30 at night. I'm like, "Cool, all right, whatever." And so like that was like one of the first things we talked about was, you know, how we can handle communication at the line of scrimmage. He goes, "I've done it both ways, where the center controls it, you know, the quarterback controls it." And I'm like, I'm kind of a control freak, so I really like, you know, Mike and everything and all that. And we had the conversation where I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm going to come out and I'm going to mic it how I see it, and, you know, how we're taught to mic it. And if you need to make adjustments, you make adjustments, and, you know, I'll get everybody on the same page. It's, you know, there's a lot of give and take with a center and a quarterback, you know, communication and being able to, you know, get to know him more and how he sees things, you know, just through conversation. That, you know, we're pretty much on the same page so far.
I don't think people realize that there is so much goes into just pointing out who we're working to. Like in the run game, the quarterback really has no say unless they're changing wholesale. It's all on you. You come to the line of scrimmage, you name someone, and we work. But in the pass game, the quarterback has to know the hot, the sight, the adjustments for the wide receivers, and it's more of a mix. Was it something that when you found out, you know, like, I'm sure we came to the NFL, you thought, oh man, the center is everything. But when do you realize, like, hey, we kind of have to be a partnership here?
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, not really knowing what to, you know, coming in college, I played tackle and I got drafted by Baltimore. They're like, hey, we're going to throw you in at center. And I'm like, I was completely lost. And actually, Juan Castillo, who was my offensive line coach my first 4 years, he had it where the center actually did control everything, even in the pass game. So, you know, having that experience and you know, kind of being the swing interior guy for a couple, 3-4 years before I got my opportunity to start was huge, because I could see how, you know, other guys would operate and communicate with the quarterback and how they would see things. And when I took over my fifth year, it was just night and day. You know, every once in a while, Joe would change something, but for the most part, we were, you know, on the same page on how we saw blitz or how we saw, you know, protection.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. So going back to when you found out Tom was going to be a Buck, we had talked a little bit beforehand. You had alerted me about 24 hours beforehand, like, hey, man, I'm kind of hearing that that he might be coming to Tampa. I was shocked. I told you, like, you're full of shit. And then obviously he ended up coming. Was it something that you had heard that might happen even before 24 hours? I mean, it feels like Tampa, even the offshore markets, was fifth or sixth. It didn't really feel like this is a place he might end up. And all of a sudden, now he's there.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you hear rumors and stuff like that. You know how it is in a locker room. And,
yeah,
you know, especially a guy like Tom, you know, I didn't believe it either. You know, I heard these rumors that, you know, hey, it's an actual, you know, possibility that he's coming down. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's like, maybe, I don't know, you know, something crazy would have to happen. And then, you know, about 24 hours before, it really started like picking up. And, you know, that's kind of when we were chit-chatting a little bit. And I'm like, I still don't believe it. Like, I won't believe it until he signs on the dotted line. And then when that happened, I'm like, holy shit. Here's what I thought was going to happen. I thought Tom was going to, you know, kind of go on this free agent little tour or whatever. Yeah. And then, you know, go back home, you know, go back to New England. And, you know, then when, you know, the reports came out that he was actually signing, I was like, holy cow, like this is, you know, organization like changing moment for, you know, the Bucks. So it was just kind of surreal. Like I didn't really believe it.
There's a lot of talk about the fit between him and Bruce Arians. Now, I imagine Bruce Arians is intense from the time he's there to the time he leaves, but he is famous for saying, hey, man, at 7 o'clock, we're out of here, right? Like, we're going home. Go home. Tom Brady notoriously is up all night texting coaches. How is that relationship going to work out when you have Tom Brady, who is in kind of an all-dayer, and Bruce Arians is going home a little bit earlier than most? Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I think coaches waste way too much time in the facility doing stupid stuff, doing CYA, instead of just going home. I'm actually on board with Bruce doing that. But that relationship kind of strikes me as kind of opposite. So I'm kind of curious how you think that'll work out.
I think it'll be great. Tom, he gets his work done. And then, he's notorious for, bugging coaches at, late hours, like you're saying. But, I think, the thing with Bruce is, like, he's such a football guy. He's a family guy and a football guy. So I don't think there'll be a huge issue with, Tom randomly texting him at 9 o'clock at night or whatever. But, that's just, Tom is such a perfectionist with everything, just like looking at these workouts and being around these workouts. And, he throws a ball and I'm like, oh, that was a great pass. And then he goes, no, hey, spot that up. And he throws five more because he didn't like, the velocity, or he didn't like the exact placement, or I'm like, it looked like a pretty good pass to me, but it's little, perfectionist type personality. And, Bruce is, big on attention to detail. So I think it'll work good.
The workouts that the PA has forbid players from doing, we'll get back to that in just a second. Touch a little bit on last year. Obviously, as an offensive lineman, you had to learn how to tackle a little bit better. But how frustrating is it to just, I played on bad teams before, and you guys weren't bad. You were competitive in every game. But I played quarterback to a ton of picks. They also didn't throw 35 touchdowns. Like, how interesting, like, kind of mentally wrapping your head around the fact that Jameis might throw a pick six, and the very next drive, it's four or five plays touchdown. I mean, I can't imagine that up and down emotion of, because I've been on bad teams. We were just bad. Like, we threw a pick six, then we were three and out, and we punt the ball. Like, it's not like we go up and down like that every game. How is it to play in a year where you had so much turmoil just in the game itself?
Yeah, it's always frustrating, obviously, having, picks and stuff like that. Then it's like, it's kind of jokingly around with, like our offensive line coach and just the guys in the room. It's like, oh, well, we'll just get this pick out of the way, then Jameis can go throw for 500 yards. And, it's like just joking around. And, that's just what he did. He would, for whatever reason, like the last, I think, five of the last six games, he opened up the first drive with a pick and then ended up throwing for, a huge amount of yards and like four touchdowns. I don't know. It just didn't make sense. But, it's obviously frustrating. And I tell this to everybody. It's like, if Jameis was able to, cut half those picks, not all of them were his fault, obviously. There's some short cut routes and stuff like that. But it's like, we're not talking just about being a winning team, but like potential of Jameis, if he throws 15 picks instead of 30,
yeah,
he's in the running for MVP. He probably would have thrown over 6,000 yards.
Yes.
And it's just crazy. You cut out half that and then you're in, we're 12-4 probably. And, he's in the running for MVP. It's crazy how that happens. But, it's definitely frustrating as an offensive lineman where I forget what game it was. We start off the game with a 8-yard carry and it's like, oh, yeah, here we go. And then the next play we throw like a pick six. It's frustrating as an offensive lineman from that aspect of the game. But, as offensive lineman, as we just put our nose to the grindstone and keep going. That's all we can do, and try to keep your emotions, pretty leveled out.
Is it frustrating to see the NFL go away from the run game so much? I mean, I know that we love running the football, but look, you have a quarterback now that they'll throw the ball. He's not going to get hit. Like, you don't have to worry about that. Like, almost pass protection now, it's going to be the easiest anyone's ever had in Tampa for a long time. But do you miss like the kind of old style? I mean, in Baltimore, that's what you guys did. You ran the ball, you play action pass, you bootleg a little bit. That kind of style is there some places, but it's not really what, especially now, you have all the wide receivers and tight ends and running backs. You're not running the football anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely, as an offensive lineman, it gets frustrating because, you know, it gives us a chance to put our weight on the defensive line, and instead of the defensive line just always trying to run down our throat. But I mean, it sucks. Yeah, you know, I'm an aggressive player, obviously, and I want to go run the ball, and I want to go like assert my will on people. But honestly, like it's such a catch 22. Like, yeah, I want to run the ball, but at the same time, I don't really care as long as we're winning. Like, I think it was 2016, 2015 or 2016. I can't remember. We played the Miami Dolphins, and like we went into the game saying, "Oh, we're gonna establish a run. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do that." And then Joe just went off for like 600 yards throwing, or yeah, I don't know if it was 600, but like he had a hot hand, and we literally like I think it might have actually been 2014 when we had Kubiak. Like literally, we're like, "Hey, we're gonna run the ball. We're gonna, you know, kill the clock. You know, control the pace of the game with the run game." And then Joe just ended up going off and throwing like 5 touchdowns, and you know. I think we ran the ball 10 times. It, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes. But I don't care how many times we run the ball, as long as we win. But it's always nice to be able to assert our dominance on another person.
You mentioned your aggressiveness, and if someone were to describe your style of play, that would be the first word that they use. You have an unusual way to get underneath the skin of defenders. How much pride do you take in that? Because as offensive linemen, we have a tough job, and we can dish it out to the other side. It feels pretty good. But you take that a little bit to the extreme. Has that always been the way you've played?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say always, but I go all the way back to my freshman year in college at CSU Pueblo. You know, I was 6'3", 225 pounds, and they actually recruited me to play DN. And then when I showed up, I had an offensive lineman number and an offensive jersey in my locker. And I'm like, oh, they got me. But I my offensive line coach in college, he goes, "No, you're 235 and you're our best option right now at tackle, you know, left tackle, actually strong tackle." We played, we would flip sides. I always went to the strong side, and it was kind of strange. It actually, I think, actually helped me in my NFL career, being able to just switch stances really easily and not really have any issues. But he goes, "You got to play with a sense of urgency and the sense of just nasty, because you're undersized and not that strong, and just, I mean, just go look at yourself in the mirror. You look like a tight end playing tackle." And I'm like, okay. And you know, he always would push for this nasty finish and being a mosquito. That's always how he's kind of described it. He goes, you know, we're like one of those can't see you like bugs that just like get in your ear, and you can't ever kill it, and it just never goes away, and eventually you're just going to snap and start, you know, freaking out. And that's kind of how he would always explain you know, finishing through the whistle and the second whistle, and you know, eventually until the refs come and break you up, you know, just being a little annoying, just the extra little, you know, not even a shove, just shove. You know, the little fingers to the ribs, just kind of like, hey, just kind of back up a little bit, and just, you know, always keeping your hand on for the last time. You know, that gets under guys' skins, and it's, for me, that's just, I take pride in getting guys out of their game, because honestly, if you can get somebody out of their game, they get more worried about trying to kick your ass than actually making plays. And to me, it's like, if I can get into somebody's head, game's over. Like, the rest of the game is going to be relatively easy for me, like, because now they're more worried about trying to kick my ass instead of, you know, making a play on the running back or the quarterback. So that's just kind of the way I play. And then, you know, obviously through the finish, you know, through the whistle and you know, always trying to throw somebody on their back. That's just the way I play the game.
You were a 6th-round pick out of, you mentioned, CSU Pueblo, which is not obviously a highly regarded football school, no offense to the Pueblos. You know, did you think you were going to get drafted? You were a 6th-round draft pick. And then did you, like, looking back on your transition, was it easier? Was it harder? How did you think it would go versus how it actually went?
Yeah, definitely. You know, Pueblo, not to, you know, we've won, like, I think 9 of the last 10 conference championships, but no big deal.
Sorry.
And a national championship in 2014, but yeah.
Sorry, guys.
But no.
Sorry, yeah. Thunderwolf. Sorry, Thunderwolf fans. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right.
It's a Thunderwolf friendly podcast.
But no, yeah, definitely in college, going to a Division II school on a $2,500 scholarship, 215 pounds when I graduated high school. I didn't think I had any type of shot to go in the NFL. And honestly, I almost didn't even go to college. I started working right when I graduated from high school. I started working with my uncle who owns his own roofing company and, you know, was throwing roofs on and shingles and all that fun stuff and was making, you know, decent money for an 18-year-old. And my mom actually forced me to go. She goes, "You already signed your letter of intent. You're gonna go for the first year. And if you don't like it, you know, you got 3 months to take over all your bills." I'm like, "All right, sounds good." And obviously I went in my freshman year and started. And it was just like a progressive thing for me. I went from 230 to 265, to 295 to about 310 my senior year. My junior spring, my junior year, I didn't give up any sacks. I didn't really have any bad plays. And my offensive line coach came up to me and he goes, "Hey, I think you got a legitimate shot." And I'm like, is he just trying to motivate me, you know, to play? So I literally, I was talking to my parents about it. I'm like, "Hey, I don't want to work this summer." They go, "Okay, well then you're gonna have to sell your dirt bike and sell some stuff to have money to live over the summer if you're not gonna be working." I'm like, "Okay, well let me text Simo and make sure he's just not, BSing me." I text him like, "Hey, are you being serious about this thing with the NFL and think that I got a chance?" And he just a one word answer. All he sent back was yes. So I was like, "All right." So ended up selling my dirt bike and just really focused on me through that summer going into my senior year. And, during camp, I was having scouts coming during practice during the week. I had a bunch of scouts coming. Yeah. So it started really coming to, fruition that, holy hell, I actually might have a chance. And, obviously I get drafted, pick 203 in the sixth round in 2013. And, just that underdog mentality has always been, something that I've tried to live and act out through my career. And, my rookie year, I ended up making the team, even though I broke my foot the third day of training camp, didn't even have a training camp, didn't get any preseason games. I made the team and they kept me active all year. I was inactive on game day for, every week. And that kind of actually is like the best thing that happened for me in my career. I got complacent and I went into my second year thinking, I broke my foot. They kept me on the roster. So I relaxed and then ended up getting my ass cut and put on practice squad for the last, until the last two games of the year. And they activated me and all that. But, that just reignited that kind of underdog mentality. And I've been trying to, through the years, going into year eight, still kind of remembering where you came from. People always say this, you have first round picks that might get, five, six different opportunities, but if you got a sixth round pick, you get one, maybe two opportunities, if even that many. So that's kind of how I got my second chance and I didn't want to screw that up. So I went back to that kind of underdog mentality and it's really propelled me through my career for sure.
I've long said that your draft slot is the most determining factor, highest determining factor typically in success in the NFL, because if you're a first round draft pick, you can get cut 2, 3, 4 times. Someone's going to be like, "Well, he's a first round draft pick. I'm going to sign him." If you're a late round draft pick, you get 1, 2 times, maybe you get cut before you're out of the NFL.
Yeah. That's just the way it is. And, fair, unfair, there's nothing's fair in life, but that's just kind of the truth behind it. You see a lot of first round picks who, get cut maybe their second, third year, and then they bounce around to 5 different teams in the next 2 years. As a 6th round pick, usually that's not how it works.
Yeah, it's crazy. But here you are, year 8. Let's talk about the here and now. So we are about a month away from when training camp is supposed to start. The PA has, again, outlawed workouts with players. I don't think they're going to listen to that because guess what? You have to get ready to play in a month. How certain are you that we're going to start on time?
Yeah, kind of like everybody else, nobody really knows what the heck's going on. But personally, I just kind of attack it like we're going to start on time and everything's going to be relatively normal. Obviously, there's, talking with people who, player reps and stuff like that, things are going to be really weird. But honestly, I think we start on time and I wouldn't be surprised if we cut out 2 preseason games, just that way we can have a little bit of an acclimation period. The first 2 weeks we get back into camp or whatever, and then get into it. But, it's going to be strange. I think we start on time. I hope we have a season this year. you know, with the development, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, how they're saying they're going to, you know, tarp off the first 10 rows of the stadium and sell. I saw your tweet, you know, the NFL stay making money, you know, by advertising and stuff like that. But no, I think it's going to be a normal start time. You know, there's going to be some buffers and weird stuff that everybody, players, coaches, trainers, you know, front office, everybody's going to have to get used to. But, you know, I think we're on track to start on time as long as nothing crazy happens.
So we don't have fans in the NFL outside of three stadiums, I think, Seattle, New Orleans, and Kansas City. Home field advantage, in my opinion, isn't a thing in the NFL. I mean, and even those teams lost three games. Seattle and Kansas City lost three games each at home last season, first time in a long time. How do you think the game will be affected if there's no fans, 25,000 fans? Like, do you think it matters as much to winning and losing? I think college is a big issue. I think college, you see a big swing. But in the NFL, have you felt that home field advantage is really that important?
I mean, in a sense, a little bit. Tampa, you know, the last 2 years, we haven't had huge crowds and stuff like that. But, you know, there's different aspects of home field advantage. For example, you know, you got a team from up north who comes down here in mid-September and it's 95 yeah. degrees and 80% humidity. You know, that's home field advantage for us because we're used to that heat. But, you know, it's the crowd noise and stuff like that. Like you said, outside of New Orleans, Kansas City, and Seattle, I mean, it gets loud places, but
yeah,
not like that. And, you know, we can still communicate and, you know, we have the silent count and all that stuff. But, you know, to me, it's crowd noise for me anyways. Once you get on the field, you kind of just zone it out and you go to work. So there's a little bit of advantage, but not a crazy amount, I don't think.
You mentioned previously about, you know, the support staff are trying to figure out how everything's going to work with the physical distancing. I saw the NFL guidelines, you know, locker 6 feet apart, meeting rooms only a certain amount of people. There's no room. I don't know how they're going to make it to where, look, NFL facilities, guys, are just a facility. Like, there's just enough lockers for 65 guys. There's just enough weight room for 65 guys. There's a cafeteria for maybe 100 people. The team meeting room seats 65 people, or really 90 people for camp. Like, it's not that big. So do you think these are actually practical? I don't. I think the NFL, it's good they put them out. There's a contingency plan for this. But I feel like when you get to the August 1st, you're either going to be in or out. Like, you can't kind of do this middle way thing with physical. Just, do you think it's possible in your facility to do the things that they've requested NFL facilities do?
You know, it's going to be a huge challenge. And, you know, just listening to, you know, different brainstorms of, you know, what the PA is trying to do. And, you know, in our facility, for example, like, I saw a picture from one of the coaches who on the offensive line meeting room, it said the maximum occupancy of 10 people. It's like, in an offensive line room, we're going to have during camp 17 people with two coaches, yeah. You know, like 15 guys, usually 15, 16 guys, and then two coaches. It's like, how are we going to do this? It's like, oh, vets, you're good. You can go out while we teach the young guys. Or it's going to be like, hey, sorry, young guys, you're going to, you know, you're probably not going to be here anyways. Like, it's crazy. And then the whole locker room thing, you know, I've heard, you know, they're going to go every other locker, and then, you know, the young guys or whatever are going to have to be over, because our facility is probably quarter mile, half mile from the stadium, and put everybody else in the stadium locker rooms and kind of go from there. And then it's like the shower issue in our showers in our locker room. We have normally, like, I think 20 showers,
yeah,
shower heads and communal shower. And they're only going to have two of them activated. Like, where you can only use two of them. So now it's like, oh, well, are we going to have to get like shower trailers? And it's just crazy thinking about the logistics of what we're going to have to do. But, you know, it's, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made, so they're going to figure out a way, that's for sure.
Yeah. Are you personally worried about getting sick? Because for me, I've kind of said for a couple of weeks now, I feel like the athletes themselves, like, if you don't have any previous conditions, I think most guys aren't worried about getting sick. I feel like your loved ones getting sick, or even the coaches. I mean, your coaches are older. Typically, like, I'm more worried about coaches than I am players. Like, are you personally worried about the virus for yourself?
For me, you know, not really. It's, you know, young, in shape, you know, in shape. Round's a shape, all right? You know, but for me personally, you know, not really. I don't have any, like, you know, issues, medical issues, like, you know, that would, you know, if I got that virus, it would be really detrimental to me. You know, obviously I worry about, you know, my parents coming into town and family, and obviously that, you know, coaches, they, you know, they are older. Most of them are, you know, in their 40s, 50s, you know, some 60, 70, you know, that obviously there's an issue with that, and you don't want to see them get sick because, you know, obviously with their age, it's more dangerous for them. But it's just one of these things. It's like, eventually the world's going to have to open back up, and we just can't, we can't hide in our houses forever. And, you know, obviously I don't want people dying and stuff like that, but eventually, you know, the world's going to have to go back to normal, or we're just going to live in fear our entire lives. And I'm not one to just sit here and live in fear, for sure. But for me, I'm not worried about it, for me personally.
I mean, I've said this on our podcast Monday, the reason why I want football back, obviously selfish reasons, I want to work and I want to watch guys play football and all that, is like, it feels like football back is some normalcy, right? Like some sort of way we're getting back to, like, no, there might not be with fans, it might not be a full season, who knows, but it feels like normalcy. And if you don't have that there, to your point, like, it's at some point you got to kind of continue life, especially if we don't have a vaccine. I don't think you can wait for a vaccine. So let's end on a happier note. Let's talk about food. You mentioned the weight you've gained throughout your life to get to where you are now. You like to cook a lot. What is a favorite thing that you like to grill? You're a big grill guy.
I mean, steak, obviously. Like, I just had a nice, juicy, thick cut ribeye. You know, I'll throw it on the smoker for, you know, 45, 50 minutes, about 250, you know, get that internal temp right about 119 degrees, then straight into a piping hot cast iron pan and sear it. I see you're over licking your lips, you know, getting all hungry and stuff. Oh, yeah. You know, sear it in some butter, some herb, you know, stuff like that. And nice medium rare thick cut steak, slice it on the cutting board, present it nice on the plate, and then chow down.
A little salt on top.
Are you
a Traeger guy though?
I'm a Traeger guy. I'm about to be a free agent, but
I feel like Traeger, like, I have a Green Egg and it's not the best for smoking. It's good for a bunch of things. It will smoke fine. I'm a big, like, wood smoke fan. Like, I think that the bark of, like, an actual smoke with all wood is what I really want. I didn't realize the egg doesn't, you really can't put more wood in there once it kind of burns off. But I think Traeger is kind of cheating. I'm not going to lie. I think it's cheating. I think it's like cheating the process.
Yeah, it's a little different because, like, it's definitely, you just set it and go. But, you know, I just, quote unquote, signed with a barbecue joint here and it's called Just Grill, and it's I wish they're paying me, but it's more just for fun. But they're going to be, like, once every, like, 2 or 3 weeks, they're going to bring me a different type of grill for me to cook on and, you know, do some content on and stuff like that. So it's going to be pretty cool to be able to see a couple different styles of grills and smokers and stuff like that. So it'll be a cool little project for me.
What's the one thing that you've wanted to cook, but you're either not really afraid, but you don't really, like, kind of know how to do it, so you really haven't done it yet? Is there one thing that you're like, man, I really want to attack this, but not quite sure yet. I don't know yet.
I mean, there's good, a couple different things. I've wanted to do, like, a whole, like, pig, like, on a smoker. Ooh. Or I've wanted to do it. At Pueblo, we had a bunch of Hawaiians that played on our team.
Oh, yeah.
And they, you know, they used to do the luau's, and they would dig a pit and throw the, I've always wanted to do that. I could probably do it in Colorado when there's no fire ban and stuff like that, but I've always wanted to, like, do a, like, traditional, like, ground, you know, and do something like that. I've never done it. And, you know,
with having somebody there, banana leaves.
Yeah. To me, seems like such a cool process. And, like, the meat that when it's done cooking and they pull that thing out is unreal. It's like nothing you've ever tasted. Like, the how moist that pork is just unreal.
A whole pig. Yeah. I miss, like, I in Oregon, we had a bunch of Polynesians and Hawaiians, and they had a house, Uso house, like 7-8 guys there, man. The food on the weekends was unbelievable. It's so when you go last one with this, when you go to different cities now, you're an older guy. I know things are a little different now. Like when I was playing, and I'm not that much older than you, but when I was young, 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, whenever we would go out to a visiting city, we'd go out and eat. Like New Orleans, we go to Dragos, we'd go eat. Do you guys go out and still eat as an offensive line? Do you enjoy that process? Or guys, just like, I think I found like toward the end of my career, I just go eat by myself. Maybe they didn't like me, I don't know. But like guys didn't go out, they don't hang out anymore.
Yeah, for sure. We actually, every Thursday night, we do an O-line dinner. And we have, you know, you start with the oldest guy in the room, they pay first. And then, you know, you go all the way down. And the guy who's paying gets to pick the restaurant, and it's awesome. But yeah, even like on like Saturdays, you know, we get into a away city or whatever, you know, there's probably like four or five of us that go out. You know, I go out with, you know, Blaine Gabbert last year when he would travel with us before he got, you know, he was on IR, but he still traveled to games and stuff. We'd go out, Earl Watford and us, like Earl, he was offensive lineman. He knew all the spots in every city that Aaron went. So like, I just hung out with him because he always took me to the best spots to eat. Like when we traveled to LA last year, like Earl, we went out there on Friday. So we had 2 days there. When we got in on Friday, Friday morning or whatever, we went and practiced and did all that. But after that, we had about 5-6 hours of free time. I think we stopped at no less than 9 different like taco joints in LA. And he goes, everyone's just like unreal and it has different profile. And I'm like, all right, cool. Let's do it. Then obviously I had to weigh in on Saturday and that wasn't good, but.
Wait. Y'all weigh Saturdays?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Oh, that's Tampa Bay training staff. I don't like, that's messed up equipment staff. I'm not going to say that weight staff. Don't weigh guys on Friday. I'll tell you what, last Tom Coughlin, and I love Tom. I really don't believe it. He weighed us the day after Thanksgiving. That's not nice, Tom. Okay. Yeah. I think my strength coach was nice enough to give me a pound or two that day. How do you weigh us after Thanksgiving? Come on, man.
Yeah, it's not good. If you don't come to weigh-ins after Thanksgiving and you're not at least 3 or 4 pounds heavier, you didn't have a good Thanksgiving.
you're not doing it right. All right, Ryan, we really appreciate you. I really appreciate you coming on today. Stay safe. Good luck this year. I'm looking forward to your first story about your sweat towel not working properly and Tom yelling at you. That's going to be an amazing story. Thank you, buddy.
Definitely appreciate you.
All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Ryan Jensen, a good friend of mine. Fantastic to get his insight. And have a great weekend, everyone. Hope everyone stays safe and healthy. Have a great one, everybody.